Hello and welcome to the best of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. The following program was broadcast July 21st, 2012. We hope you enjoy it. By the way, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you on the World Radio Network, Sky Digital in the United Kingdom, Sirius XM in North America, and on partner stations around the world, including shortwave. Joining us now is Victor Gunatelica, all the way in Sri Lanka. Now, Victor, we got sent to you a new DR111, a DRM receiver from Neustar Electronics. Now, before we get to it, I do want to say one thing, for myself anyway. I love DRM as a technology. It is a fantastic, fantastic technology. I wanted to get that out of the way because, Victor, as you know, occasionally in radio, some people, they'll say you criticize something, but they don't realize that actually you like the idea. So I wanted to get that out of the way.
And can I also say I share your views exactly. I want DRM to succeed. And that's really what I want. It's so beautiful when it works, but when it doesn't work, there's absolutely nothing.
Now, we got sent to you a DR111, a new DRM receiver that has been hailed as an affordable DRM receiver because the previous ones that were available on a limited basis from websites in Europe were usually around, well, more than $200. This one is somewhere around the $140 mark. Now, you've had one for a few days. What was your impression when you opened it out of the box?
I was hoping that my first standalone DRM receiver would do away with all the myths of the failure of DRM and that I'll have a little receiver which will give me DRM reception perfect. That was my impression, my hope as I opened the box. And I really wanted it to work. And this is the first time that I had experimented or I was going to tune in a standalone DRM receiver. What I do for DRM is I use my Perseus, well, that's more than $1,000, and the Dream software and a very good antenna. And that's what has been giving me some form of DRM. So my expectations were high. This was specially made for DRM.
Okay, so your expectations were high. Did it meet those expectations once you took it out of the box?
Sadly not. Because even before I could start tuning, I found that the tuning knob, which doubles up as the volume controller, just wouldn't do what the little booklet said. That when I pressed it in, it should be frequency tuning. However much I pushed it in, it just didn't work. I was horrified. I thought I had got something very, even not factory tested. So in desperation, even before I started tuning around looking for DRM, I pulled that knob off. I blew into it, did a little bit of, a little mantram or something and put it back, and then it started working. So can you imagine, I get a brand new radio and I had to start messing around with it for it to start to work as it at least to tune around. So that was number one. Then after that, of course, I started tuning around, and I really found that whoever designed it hadn't ever tuned a shortwave radio probably. I was so shocked that it had so many things that it did wrong. But having said that, when you do get the stations, I'm not talking about DRM, I just leave that alone a little bit. When I get a shortwave signal, I found it not too bad, but not up to expectations. With the WIP antenna, I could pick up the BBC and a few other stations, but not strong enough that I would like to from a new little portable. I'm not talking about professional communication receivers. So that way, it was disappointing, but I was glad that it was pulling in something.
But you know, Victor, one of the things that surprised me is there are a number of receivers out there around like $20, $30, $40, which perform way better than this one on analog shortwave.
Exactly, exactly. If I looked at the DR111 or 111, whatever you like to call it, on the shelf of a shop, I just would, and looking at the price tag of, we'll say, $140, I just wouldn't touch it other than hoping that it'll perform as a DRM receiver. Because for much less, as you say, for $10 or even less, I can get an analog shortwave receiver a portable running off two or three batteries. By the way, which the DR111 doesn't operate on DC batteries at all. It's not portable. You need a power source. That's sad enough. And as you said, just $5 would give me much better, reliable, easy shortwave listening. So as a shortwave receiver, even a small portable, sadly, it's not for me. I wouldn't spend $10 even on this for shortwave. And medium wave, reasonable.
Did you find it easy to tune the radio from frequency to frequency? Like one of the things that slightly annoys me is when you press the volume knob, which doubles as a tuning knob, the sound on the speakers goes silent. And then you tune to the frequency, and then to hear anything, even static, you have to hit the button again.
Yes. Now, this is exactly why I said, Keith, a little earlier on, that whoever designed this radio probably never tuned a shortwave radio. Because, we are used to tuning around either the fast forward like the buttons or the nice smooth tuning knob or keypad entry. The moment you hit a frequency, out it comes. Or static would boom in, as you rightly put it. But here, as you said, you push the button, the volume knob in as it doubles up as your tuning knob, and then the receiver goes dead silent. Absolutely nothing, muting. And then you can tune the frequency. As you tune the frequencies, 5, 10, 15, up and down, you hear absolutely nothing. So what you have to do is tune to a frequency, push the tuning button back again, and then the receiver comes alive. And then if there is a station, fine. If there isn't, there's nothing. So there is no way to look for a station. There is a scan button, but that's another story in itself. It would scan a frequency, and it would take 2 or 3 seconds for the audio to come up. Again, the muting to get out and the audio to come out, whatever tuning system you use, there is silence for 2 seconds, and that is just not radio listening for me, or for anybody, I would think.
You see, Victor, when I tried the scanning button, the problem that I had, for example, if we take Channel Africa, I'm not sure in Sri Lanka, but here in Taiwan, picking up Channel Africa, it's not one of the clearest stations. If I use my external antennas, I can pick it up. It's weak, it's very weak, but I can understand the content. Now, when I tried the scanning function to scan near the frequency that I was looking for Channel Africa, it went right over it. It didn't even lock onto it. But my other receivers had no problem getting onto that frequency, even though it was very weak.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And that happens not only for DRM, it's a disaster. DRM, it'll just run through and come back and not have anything. Of course, it would sometimes stop and I would see the text. Now, the strongest signal I get at this time is the BBC DRM on 5845. And even that signal, I wouldn't get a continuous audio signal on DRM on this standalone DRM receiver. But at the same time, even with a S3 with static but perfectly readable analog shortwave makes the day for me. So what I'm saying is, if you make a DRM receiver, market it as a standalone DRM receiver, you should at least have uninterrupted reception that doesn't drop off, at least from the strongest signal beam to your area. If you don't get it, well, it's not for me. I think it's $140 spent unnecessarily.
One of the strongest DRM signals that we can pick up in this part of East Asia is All India Radio on 15050 kilohertz. Now, when I tune to that frequency, which is, that's, I believe, only a 50 kilowatt, when I tune to that frequency using my Texan radio, it shows a very clear, strong signal on the signal meter, usually around 4 and between 5. When I use the DRM receiver, even though I don't hear any interference from other stations on that channel, the only thing I get is text. Occasionally, a little bit of audio will seep through for a few seconds and then stop. When I use the IF out on my Texan to a DRM converter using the Dream software, I have no problem.
Aha. That's very interesting. To go back to 15050 at 1300 until 1500, it's beamed from Delhi right into Sri Lanka in Sinhala. And I don't get continuous audio even on that signal. So either the DRM receivers are bad or DRM in itself is not performing up to expectations. Just plain and simple as that for me, Keith.
Now, let me ask you, because the DRM technology has been around for a long time, but of course, a number of years ago, many other broadcasters were using DRM as well. Now, Radio Canada International stopped all shortwave broadcasts, so they stopped. We saw the Netherlands do the same thing. And there was even a time, I believe, that the Voice of America was part of the consortium, but they left, correct?
Yes, I can't remember hearing the VOA on DRM on any frequency. Of course, BBC, the Vatican, even right now, the Vatican is broadcasting to Sri Lanka and India, have 20 minutes of programming. And just before Radio Canada closed down from 15 hours to 15:30, RCI was for half an hour. And for me to pick that up, even with my Perseus and a good long wire antenna, I just couldn't get 100% audio. I had to put my log periodic antenna, amateur band log periodic antenna, which was very directional, and it had a good harmonic on 17 megahertz, and it performed well. So imagine, to get 100% DRM audio, I had to use a Perseus and a log periodic antenna, and the combination with the computer that I needed for DRM exceeds $3,500. Now, if that is what I need to spend or do to get DRM, I'm sad it's not for me. But I'll tell you what, when you get that, I put my log periodic, I tune to the station, I beam to the station. Ah, it's absolutely fantastic. I've never heard anything like that on shortwave. So let me give it to DRM. Absolutely fantastic technology. When it works like a bomb. Absolutely fantastic. But when it doesn't, a $10 little Sanjin or, unbranded little Chinese portable or wherever it's made does much better.
Now, if we take, let's say, All India Radio, because All India Radio has a few DRM transmissions, why would a station like All India Radio, use DRM now. And is there any idea of how many, say, DRM receivers are in India, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh?
As far as I know, although All India Radio uses 2 hours to Sri Lanka, 1300 to 1500, as far as I know, I don't know whether SLBC has a DRM radio. The only listener in the whole country out of 20 million would be myself. But at the same time, the same service which goes on medium wave, 1053 kilohertz, and a couple of shortwave frequencies have quite a large audience. You only have to listen to their musical requests or mailbag programs, and you wonder, where have all these people been? They're listening, they're writing, they're commenting, not asking for calendars and ball pens and things like that, Keith, but really interested 100% listeners to the All India Radio singular program. For DRM, just myself, and I would just tune it for academic purposes. So I don't know where the receivers are. I don't know in Sri Lanka, other than somebody like you sending me a DRM radio, who'd buy a DR111 and pay $135 US, and that's the price of a TV set, I tell you.
So let me ask you then, why would a station like All India Radio continue using DRM if you're, they say, the only listener in Sri Lanka?
I don't know. I don't like to speculate. It's not right, and I don't like to do it. But I just do not understand, other than just the fact that they are experimenting, hoping that the thing will come right, they will improve, and people will buy radios. But I don't really know. But, of course, like the United States NASA sending a rocket to the moon, you know, a manned probe that cost billions of dollars just to put a man on the moon. I don't know whether DRM is doing just like that, to put a broadcast to Sri Lanka, spending so many thousands of rupees, Indian rupees or whatever a year, the cost of it, just to put one man on the radio. I don't know, Keith.
Okay, now we're... Okay, we're running out of time, Victor. Final thoughts on this receiver, and let me ask you this direct question. If somebody came to you and said, Victor, should I purchase this radio because I want to have DRM and I want to listen to shortwave, what would you say?
I would say, no, this is not a radio for DRM or shortwave. But I'll tell you what, if you like to play music, I love the feature. You chuck in a USB memory stick, and play music. Ha, that's lovely. So this, Keith, with your compliments, will sit in my wife's pantry playing music for her from a memory stick, but not sadly DRM.
So in other words, Victor, we had one positive thing to say about the radio, so it's not all bad.
Yeah, that's it. Sadly, I really was hoping, Keith, that this would work for me for DRM, at least 90%. Sorry, it's 90% out.
Victor Gunatelica, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. If I could have said something, experimenting with this radio and giving out something for the listener before he just goes in blindly and picks up a radio, I would have done my duty.
And that was a conversation that I had with Victor Gunatelica on July 21st, 2012. You are listening to the Best of Media Network Plus. Now, as we started the Best of Media Network Plus, I did mention that from time to time we would bring you news stories of concern to the Asia-Pacific region. The latest global grouping of public broadcasters says Nauru's ban on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation journalists attending the Pacific Islands Forum Summit is completely unacceptable. The president of the Pacific Media Alliance, Paul Thompson, who is also chief executive at Radio New Zealand Domestic, says the ban strikes at the heart of integrity of the forum. The Nauru government issued the ban this week, accusing the ABC of false reporting. In the wake of the ban, there have been calls for the media boycott of the summit. Don Wiseman asked Mr. Thompson if this is something he would endorse.
I don't think it's the PMA's role to endorse a boycott. I think that's up to individual broadcasters. But what I would say is that wearing both my RNZ chief executive hat and my PMA hat, that what is happening in Nauru around this banning of the ABC journalists is really worrying. It's a brazen attempt to chill those journalists and completely unacceptable in terms of, you know, the Pacific Forum's role as a regional body and Nauru trying to control who can go and report on it. I think it strikes at the heart of the integrity and openness of the forum. I'm really concerned about it. RNZ will be sending a reporter to cover the forum, and we will be making all of our journalism, hard-hitting journalism, available to our colleagues at the ABC. So, you know, I just want to make that clear that we're going to go there and do our job and make sure that news gets out.
There's a lot of stories that any journalist who goes to Nauru would like to talk about and would like to talk with people there about. But one of the other things that Nauru has done in recent times is introduce a contempt of court law that effectively muzzles everyone. It stops people from being willing to talk to the media. What does the Public Media Alliance think about that?
Look, we see problems with media freedom in many areas of the Pacific, and you just need to look at what's happened in Tonga in the last 12 months to think about the challenges that the media face doing their job in this part of the world where so many big stories need to be told. So I look at what's happening in Nauru, and what you see is a government that's trying to close down dissent and debate and misusing its power to keep its people in ignorance and stop the other countries and other parts of the world understanding what's going on. So I think it's an appalling overreach by the government and reflects very poorly on the quality of democracy in that part of the world. And, you know, whether the Pacific Forum members see it like this or not, by going there and hosting the event in Nauru and allowing that ban on the ABC journalists to stand, that they are endorsing this loss of freedom of speech and media.
The New Zealand government's been taking in recent times a fairly conciliatory approach to what's happening in Nauru. Is this the right approach?
I'm not close enough to it, and I don't know enough about it to give a considered view on that. But clearly New Zealand needs a relationship with Nauru, and I'm sure that there are various discussions going on which are designed to improve the quality of democracy and government in Nauru. But, you know, I do also think it's up to New Zealand to defend freedom of expression throughout the region, which is such a pivotal part of how we operate as democracy, and it's part of what New Zealand wants to support to ensure a healthier Pacific. So if Pacific nations fall down in freedom of expression, that cuts to the very heart of their effectiveness as democracies and the health of the region. So I think that's a message that New Zealand should be giving.
Now, Nauru has in place an effective ban on journalists going there outside of the summit. It has this visa application fee of $6,000, a non-refundable application fee. Very few journalists have been there in the last several years because of that. So it becomes an effective ban. It's been waived, I think, because of pressure from the forum for this single event. But I would imagine they're going to reinstate it once everyone leaves. What would the PMA say about that?
Again, it's unacceptable and reflects very poorly on the quality of democracy in Nauru and the behaviour of the government. You have to ask the question of what are they trying to hide? They obviously have major problems that they're dealing with or not dealing with. You know, I would argue that good, honest, direct, robust reporting would actually be really good for Nauru in the long term. But in the short term, they're trying to keep a lid on it, and that never works in the long term.
A social media campaign alleging corruption against two Papua New Guinea daily newspapers has heavily criticized by the local media council. MP for Mangdan, Brian Kramer, has started a protest on Facebook alleging that activities within the daily newspapers contributes to fake news on a daily basis. He also alleges a reporter from one of the newspapers was involved in corrupt activities. The secretary of the PNG Media Council, Belinda Cora, told Morea Tupalgatera that Mr. Kramer needs to back up his allegations.
A good member to come forward with evidence so we can be able to deal directly with the council member and the employee. But to date, we have not received anything. And we had to come out with a press release in order to also try to assure the rest of the country and those who are also on Facebook that the Media Council is here to stay, and that the Media Council will continue to ensure the freedom of the press and the right to continuously publish news stories for the rest of the country will continue.
Obviously, the concern is that everyone else will be tarnished.
When it's an attack on one person, it must be clearly understood that from experience, it attacks on everyone because of the word media itself. And so we just didn't want that to, you know, overspill into something bigger. I should also point out that the substantive matter of fighting corruption, which is the reason why I understand Mr. Cramer had gone out on social media, is also a fight that we encourage within our council members and also the media in Papua New Guinea. And we are not against that. It is just that we want to deal with facts, and the facts must be put to the council so that we can be able to address this more appropriately. Because we aren't arming ourselves enough to go and speak to our members, and it's just word of mouth. It's just at a press conference. It's just through a protest on Facebook, and we don't want that. We want people, and not only the leader, but also the public in general who have any issues in relation to the conduct of our council members to also come forward and report them, and of course bring with them facts or evidence, even documents, so we can be able to address them appropriately.
Because I guess it's very difficult to defend people when there is no, you know, evidence about the allegations that Mr. Cramer is making.
Yes, that has been an issue that me and the President, Neville Choi, has been aggressively trying to get from not only the MP concerned, but also other individuals and other organizations, businesses, who have raised similar concerns in relation to the role we play. And I understand that we may have challenges, we may have loopholes, we may have all this, but it's something that everyone needs to try and assist us in order for us to assist them. That's important also.
And that's all we have time for on this edition of Best of Media Network Plus, including a couple of news stories, actually, that came in this past week. If you enjoyed the program, do let us know how you heard it, what platform it was on, and we will respond. But, of course, just look for us on Facebook. Just do a search for PCJ Radio International. Anyway, that's all we have time for. So, until next time, 73 and 88 to the ladies.